From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of June, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. We'll be joined by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois, to talk about the price of corn, soybeans, and its relationship to inflation. Then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast to that with Mike Tenera at T-Storm Weather, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at WILLAG.org, or look for the Closing Market Report in your favorite podcast application.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, futures in Chicago were sharply lower today. July corn down 21 and a quarter cents, settled at $7.46 and three quarters. New crop 38 and a quarter cents lower at $6.55 and a half, below $7 for the afternoon. July beans, old crop at 59 and a half cents lower, $15.93 and a quarter, the settlement price in November, down 61 cents at $14.15 and a half. Bean meal, $5.70 lower, the bean oil down $2.95, wheat futures in the soft red down 39 and a quarter. They settled at $9.37 and a quarter, and the hard red July at $10 and a nickel, down 34 and a quarter cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $133.87 and a half, down a dollar and a nickel for the day. The feeders for the August at $174.85, up $1.70. And lean hogs, also the August contract, $4.65 lower. They settled at $103.67 for 100 pounds. Crude oil at $104.30 a barrel, down about $1.90 for the afternoon. Diesel fuel, 6 2/10 cents lower at $4.21 7/10. And the wholesale price of gasoline, down 6 9/10 cents at $3.66 a gallon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now about 49 points lower at 30,426. The S&P 500 up $9.50 for the day. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us to take a look at what turned out to be a really ugly day, kind of an ugly week thus far, Matt, at the CME Group in Chicago for corn and soybeans. Things just dropped dramatically. What happened that caused this?
Well, you know, the last couple, 3 days, we've essentially had a massive meltdown for a variety of reasons. If you go back to Friday, you know, we saw these corn on Friday, you know, performing really good. We had double-digit gains in the market. You actually saw, a high on Friday, clear up at 749 and a quarter, closed today around the 655 area. So, but we've seen a dollar drop in the market. You know, one thing that happened on Friday that really caught my attention is that, you know, crude oil is trading down $8 for a good chunk of the day. certainly made it stiff headwinds for our, you know, energy markets, essentially. And quite frankly, that's what corn is in. And so very frustrating type of trade. But at the same time, you know, I think you can't discount the fact that the market's looking pretty closely at forecasts. And yes, most of us in our part of the world and in most parts of the Midwest are saying, but I'm dry, you know, I'm dry. But the forecast continues to back off, you know, some of the extreme heat. It's got a potential for some rainfall in the Western Corn Belt here over the next couple, 3 days. Slight chance of rain for some of us over the weekend. But quite frankly, this seems to be a bit overdone if we're trading forecasts. So there's a lot of different things going on. Lastly, you just can't discount the deflationary type environment it appears that we're in. You know, you look at, for instance, crude oil, you look natural gas, you know, getting absolutely killed again today. The Dow's trying to stay above 30,000, but there's a lot of money that's been pulled out of these markets over the last week or two.
Yeah, so deflation, inflation, stagflation, one of those three, I guess, may or may not be coming. Farmers have to make their way through this season. Weather market seems like the thing that will be most substantial throughout the rest of the season. Is there any advice you're giving them when they call and they say, what should we do at this point? Do I just hold pat? I've got a crop in the ground now, and frankly, they don't know what they're going to harvest, and they're probably really pretty concerned, I would think.
Yeah, and concerned for good reason. There's no question. Now, a lot of this is going to be completely dependent upon, you know, what your crop insurance situation is, how many insured bushels that you have, you know, how aggressive do you want to get. Anytime that we're selling substantially above the spring insurance price, it's pretty smart business in my opinion. And so you're still 65 cents above that price. Now, am I getting bearish on you here? Obviously on a day like today, everyone's probably leaning a little bearish, but at the same time, I've got to think we have to look back towards last year. We saw a very similar move in these corn last year in the month of June. And I think you get out past options expiration, which is tomorrow, you're probably looking at the chance that this market might be able to rebound just a little bit. Now, much of this will be heavily dependent upon what's the acreage and stocks report. I've got to think that this stocks report might end up being a little friendly. I mean, you look at someone sent me some bids from over at Burlington today. Yesterday they were bidding 60 cents over. Today they moved to $1.10 over. Obviously the board has got a lot to do with that, and they're having a hard time sourcing the bushels that they're wanting to get. And so that's not an isolated incident, but no question about it that we've taken a lot of wind out of the sails of this market. But if you have a bullish stocks and acreage report next week, which I certainly think is a possibility, then this market could see some retracement back higher. But this has to be a reminder for each one of us that just because we're not getting rain, that does not mean that the market's going to move higher. Yes, I want to be bullish too whenever my farm's not getting rain, but bottom line is the market doesn't have to do anything.
Speaking of the reports next week, they're due out on Thursday. You at agmarket.net have some acreage figures that you released. Can you tell me about your expectations for corn, soybeans, and maybe even wheat?
Yeah, and so essentially we came out with our estimates. We think that we're actually going to go up just a little bit, even really on all three. I think that, you know, whenever you look, for instance, at corn, have you lost some acres in parts of the country? Absolutely. There's no doubt you've lost some corn in North Dakota. There's going to be prevent plan up there. We know that. We lost some corn out of the Delta. Extremely wet this spring. Had to push planting back. Went to more soybeans down there. But you had to have picked up some corn acres in the I states is my presumption. Anytime you run the corn price to the kind of levels that we've seen, we've got to assume based upon the different people we talk to, whether it's people in the seed industry or just simply the customers that we work with, we feel like we're going to go up in acreage a little. We said 89.7. Now, I would say, Todd, if we came in next week with a drop from 89.5, I'd be a little surprised, I guess I wouldn't be totally shocked, just simply due to how strange this year has manifested itself with fertilizer price and whatnot. We're up to 91.1 on beans, just a small increase. We feel like we'll probably increase both. And then whenever we look at wheat, we're actually up just a shade on wheat as well over planting intentions at 47.4. Now, that's just 0.05 over where we were, the USDA was at for intentions. But we feel strongly that high prices have tried to do the job they needed to do, which was to incur more acreage. And historically, that's what we've seen happen, and we don't expect this year to be any different.
You mentioned that the grain stocks numbers will be pretty important. Those are a reflection, of course, of usage and what's left and available. Do you believe that ethanol demand will be up, that livestock usage will be up? These are numbers that will just be reflected in how much is left in the grain bin, frankly. And so I take it you think demand remains strong for both corn and soybeans.
Demand certainly has remained strong. It seems like bean demand is definitely backing off. Crush margins on beans have backed off here over the last couple, three, 4 weeks. And so we're seeing that real strong push for beans, the strong basis and whatnot. It's not near what it was even just 4, 5, 6 weeks ago. So, for me, I think that beans are going to come in extremely tight still. But the presumption is that Brazil, of course, is going to come in with a ton of acres this next year. It's a futures market, and I think the people are coming to the realization that we're not going to completely run out of beans on the corn side. Yeah, corn grind for ethanol has just been awfully impressive. We've seen good margins there. No question in my mind, USDA is going to have to raise corn usage for ethanol. And I think whenever you come in here and you're looking at extremely strong basis levels at a time when we ran corn to multi-year highs, it's got to tell you that, yeah, the farmers may be a little bit tight-fisted, but at the same time, you would think that $8.50, $9 corn would pry that corn out of the farmer's hands. And of course, I'm talking cash price here, so I'm not so sure that we don't have a bullish surprise in the stocks report.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next week.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That is Matt Bennett. He is with agmarket.net. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. Find us online at willag.org. A programming note here. We'll record Commodity Week this afternoon from the Case dealership in Urbana. Our thanks go to the folks at Berkey's Farm Store for so kindly offering up their conference room when I called and checked with them. My intention had been to record at the Riggs Brewery across the roadway from them. However, it's the beginning of Riggs Fest, and I was pretty sure that it would be far too loud to try to record a program there. Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, and Chip Nellinger and I will make our way back over to Riggs Beer after we're finished recording Commodity Week at Berkey's. That'll be around 5 o'clock this afternoon, and if you'd like to join us there, they'll have 5 food trucks on site. Live band should be a great start to their Riggs Fest weekend. Again, that's at Riggs Beer in Urbana. And our thanks go to the folks at Berkey's Farm Store, the Case dealership in Urbana, for allowing us to record Commodity Week today in their conference room. We'd be glad to see you tonight at Riggs Beer if you'd like to join us. University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Gary, thank you for being with us. You penned an article for the Farm Doc Daily website this week. It's entitled Inflation and Commodity Prices. This is something that producers and the market have been interested in for a while. I know that's probably the reason that you did take a look at it. Can you tell me some of the things you found?
Yeah, we looked at the relationship that we have between inflation and corn and soybean prices. We wrote it because inflation has been high here recently. It has been above 8% for the last 3 months. May through March, or March through May, we've had over 8% inflation. Last time we had that was back in the 1970s and late 1980s. So we're going back to that inflationary period where we had inflation for roughly a 10-year period, a little bit more than a 10-year, or a little bit less than a 10-year period. And we looked at how inflation is related to both corn and soybean prices.
Can you give me some of the reasons behind inflation at this point?
Yeah, so we have relatively high inflation. A lot of the inflation has to do with COVID and its responses. So we had a COVID pandemic, which shut down the economy, and now we brought that back online, so there was some pent-up demand. There were supply chain disruptions, which are causing all sorts of issues with getting products here and raising their cost. Federal government, third reason, instituted quite a few aid packages that put a lot of funds into the economy, and that increased demand for goods and prices. And we've seen both energy prices, food prices increase, as well as labor costs. So all of those things have contributed to higher inflation rates.
Do commodity prices, corn and soybeans in particular, track inflation very closely?
Not that closely. Actually, when we look at the correlation between inflation and corn and soybean prices, it's roughly 0.2. So there is a positive relationship there, but it's a very weak relationship. You can have periods of high corn and soybean prices and low inflation and vice versa. We did see, though, back in the 1970s, we reached a new higher corn and soybean plateau back then, and that did correspond to a period of higher inflation. But we would be very skeptical of making the claim that we're reaching a new higher plateau for either corn or soybeans right now, because it doesn't, we can't identify a demand or supply factor that has permanently changed that would cause corn and soybean prices to increase.
And we've already done this in this century. So within the last 15 years, have really managed to move to a new plateau already. What do those numbers look like by comparison, prices that is, for corn and soybeans by comparison to the previous time frames?
So if we think of a new plateau now, or the plateau that we're on for corn and soybeans, it'd be 420 for corn and $10 for soybeans. That has been in place since 2006. Prior to that, there was a plateau from 1973 through 2006, which had corn at roughly $2.40 and soybeans at $6. So we went up with the ethanol boom to those new higher levels. We're obviously well above those prices right now. But we would attribute most of that to higher, actually, supply issues somewhere around the world, and demand issues. Ukraine-Russia war is obviously having an impact on positive on commodity prices, and we likely will see those dissipate. Maybe not this year, maybe not next year, but somewhere down the road, and we'll be back to that 420 level and $10 for soybeans. Hopefully not this year, not likely this year, but somewhere down the road, that's a likely occurrence.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time with me today, Gary.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's turn our attention to the weather forecast now. Mike Tenura is here from T-Storm Weather. That's at tstorm.net online. You can check more out from him there. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us today. I appreciate that. Let's get into this right away. We've had some really warm weather, some hot weather, though it looks like at least the nighttime temperatures are going to be lower. They have been the last couple of nights. Can you tell me about the next couple of weeks throughout the Corn Belt, please?
Well, it is going to turn a lot cooler once we get into Sunday and Monday. A large cool front is approaching, and that will move on through, and that will drop temperatures considerably. Highs will only be in the 70s and 80s over much of next week, with lows in the 50s and 60s. So that's about 15 degrees cooler than where we've been and where we're going to be over the next few days. There will be some rain with that transition to cooler weather. But the problem is that low humidities exist in front of the cool front. And because of that, as it moves through, we don't think we're going to see very much rain. Now, we'll see some okay rains across the northwest half of corn and soybeans, with a quarter of an inch to maybe 3/4 of an inch in a few locations, and maybe even a pocket or two of higher amounts in parts of northeast Kansas, southeast Nebraska, northwest Missouri, and southwest Iowa, including around 5 to 10% of U.S. corn and soybeans. But other than that, there's not a whole lot of rain coming up with this system. Once we get into next week, we'll have that cooler air mass in place, but along with that comes much lower humidities. That will make it difficult for much rain to form next week, which brings us all the way out to next weekend, around 7 to 10 days from now. At that point in time, we should see some warmer weather develop. We should see some better chances for rain. But we don't think we're going to see heavy rainfall at this point. And Todd, it might be surprising to hear this, but we would argue that you're going to need heavy rain over the first 1 to 2 weeks of July, or there's going to be some problems. The month of June is going to go down as number three driest in the seven-state Corn Belt. And if we don't see a lot of rain over the next few days in the Western Corn Belt, we actually have a shot at being number two driest, which will replace 2012, which was the big drought year for the month of June. Now, I know people listening in Western areas are probably saying, how can that be? It's been an okay situation, but there's a lot of areas of the Corn Belt, including some key areas of Illinois that have been pretty dry. Based on the forecast going forward, it's very likely to end up being number three driest since at least 1960 in the seven state Corn Belt, with again a low chance to replace 2012 with number two, which would mean that it's the driest since 1988. And we all know about 1988 and 2012 having been some pretty poor years. All that said, there's a lot of weather to go. If we start to get some really big rains in July, then things will start to shape up and maybe we won't be thinking too much about this. But if those rains start to fall apart in 1 to 2 weeks from now and then a little bit beyond that, there's no doubt we're going to need a lot of rain.
So it's the lack of humidity that's the real problem at this point. Why is that humidity not in place?
Well, it's because of these alternating air masses that we continue to deal with. It gets real hot for a few days, and then it gets real cool for a few days, and we're going to be moving back into that cooler period. Every time it turns cooler, an area of surface level high pressure drops through the Corn Belt, and surface level highs are associated with dry air masses. And because of that, even though it starts to warm up after the cool moves away, you need a little bit of time to allow humidities to increase to sufficient levels for thunderstorms. The problem is that each of these highs is essentially blocking the Gulf of Mexico from transporting muggy air to the north, and that's what's leaving it pretty dry from a humidity standpoint, which makes passing weather systems unable to produce a whole lot of rain. And that's kind of the situation we're in. We're going to stay in that one. And the next thing we eventually need to think about is that if rains don't materialize for some reason in July, then all of a sudden dry soil moisture becomes a problem because that also keeps humidities lower than they would otherwise be. So there's a lot banking on this forecast around 10 days from now. We need to see those rains verify, or this is going to become a big topic.
I have one other question, and this is about the oscillation of the highs. Usually we think during the summer months of the high being in the four corner states and oscillating back and forth, moving to the northwest. But it sounds as if this high is in the northwest and drops to the southeast. Am I right? And how much of a difference does that make?
Well, it depends if you're talking about upper level highs or surface level highs, because there are two different things there. Surface level highs are associated with cool and dry air for the most part. And that's what we're dealing with. We keep having these surface level highs drop in from Canada, move across the Corn Belt, and then exit via the eastern U.S. And that's what's keeping humidities low. To the immediate south of that, we have upper level high pressure, which is associated with hot air masses. And they're basically interacting with each other, but neither is able to take over central United States weather. So one comes in and the other one moves out, then eventually things moderate and then they replace each other. And that's still the situation that we're in. You might recall that a week ago, it looked like the upper level high was going to take over and things were going to turn very warm, starting up in a few days and then continuing through the end of the month. Well, it's now clear that's not going to happen. And we're basically in the same situation that we were in a week or two ago. And so until something breaks convincingly, we're going to stay in this pattern. Now, again, it does look a little bit warmer with some thunderstorm chances coming up in about 10 days, but those will need to verify because there's not much between now and then.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Yeah, great being here, Todd.
Mike Tenara is with T-Storm Weather. You can find him online at tstorm.net. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. There you can listen to our agricultural programming on demand. Just click and play from the website, or if you prefer, look us up in your favorite podcast applications, including Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Amazon Music, Spotify, Audible, NPR One, and many, many more. Just search out the Closing Market Report or Commodity Week, along with the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. Our theme music for the day is produced by farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.